Welcome to the program for Friday, March 2nd, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, and before I introduce you to the panelists that I have on the program this week, I got to get one piece of business out of the way. Today is Mom's birthday. So I have to say happy birthday to Mom because she listens on the stream sometimes. So if she's tuning in from York, Pennsylvania this afternoon, happy birthday, Mom, and thanks for putting up with me over the last however many years I've been around. Terrific lineup on the Federal News Countdown this week, counting down the three most important federal news stories of the week as they've chosen them. It's Dan Mintz, who is with PowerTech and is now was a former chief information officer at the Transportation Department. It's good to see you, my friend. Thanks for being here.
Good to be back.
You have a theme in your stories that I noticed this week, and we'll talk about that in just a second. John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service has chosen his stories for the countdown this week. It's always good to see you, my friend.
It's always a pleasure to be here, Francis.
Thank you very much. And your friend Tim is going to be on with me next hour talking about the Senior Executive Service.
So yes, you're getting your full fill of the partnership.
I've just got to figure out a way to get Tim on and then Max, and we'll have everybody. We'll have like all of the people that we always talk to on in one day.
We'll work on it.
Have a partnership day. The Federal News Countdown, as I mentioned, includes the three most important federal news stories of the week, as each of these gentlemen has chosen them. And we start with number three from Dan Mintz. And first, before you talk about this story, what's your theme this time around?
So one of the things that people talk about is how a fish doesn't understand all the time that it's swimming in water. And my contention is that we're in the middle of a very, very dramatic revolutionary change in technology that's coming about because of what I call, and I'm going to use three terms, ubiquitous real-time broadband access. Ubiquitous, I mean, we're now used to having access to the information and the internet all the time, anywhere. It's real-time, it's right now, and it's broadband video. And that change, and that's a relatively recent change in the last year or so, where you can do video to all your phones and things like that, means that how we experience the internet and all the implications of it are going to be radically different. And I'm going to talk about that with each a little bit with each of the three articles.
All right, your third most important story is from FedScoop. The headline is Cybersecurity Bill Rejected, Alternative Proposed. I might argue with the idea that everybody has rejected the original cybersecurity bill. There is this group of seven Republican senators that have introduced their own alternative to it. What do you see in this discussion?
So the specifics of the article, there's been a lot of argument over the last couple of years of how we should reform the way the government deals with cybersecurity. And there's a series of conflicts that are going on with this. As you pointed out, there's a lot of agreement, actually, but there are some details that are not agreed to. One of the issues is, what's the role of private industry versus the federal government? Some legislators feel that private industry should take the lead, but the government should regulate. Other people feel that allowing the government to regulate that gives them long-term authority over the private companies, which they're concerned about. There's also a little bit of argument over a term they call the kill switch, which may not be the right word, but it gives the president the authority under some conditions to turn off part of the internet. And there are people who are concerned that if you allow that a little bit, you're allowing that a lot of it.
But there are a lot of folks that say that there never was a kill switch in the first place and that that was just hyperbole.
It is probably a phrase that doesn't accurately reflect it, but the bill did have the fact that the president, under some conditions, could impact on the operation of part of the internet. Mm-hmm. So is that important or unimportant? It depends on what you think. Mm-hmm. The key issue I would say here that, again, flows through all this is these issues are ultimately not technological. They're doctrinal. That is, they're policy issues. You can do whatever you want to do. The issue is, what do you want to do, and what's the policy you want to follow? And you're going to find that these are the arguments that are now flowing through all this discussion. People confuse that with technology. Technology has nothing to do with the argument.
Mm-hmm. Give me the three things again. Ubiquitous, the three expectations for broadband.
Ubiquitous, yeah. Real-time, uh-huh. And broadband. Those three things combined change our relationship to the internet and access to information. It's available in a ubiquitous fashion, anywhere, anytime. It's real time. That is, it's the information right now. all the time. And broadband, that means you get audio and video anywhere. And that changes our relationship. You know, that this now comes to us wherever we are.
You and I need to have a conversation probably off the air, because it might bore everybody to tears, about the ubiquity part of that. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts about that. Dan Mintz's third most important federal news story of the week is from FedScoop. The headline is Cybersecurity Bill Rejected, Alternative Proposed. John, your third most important story is actually a commentary. It's from The Hill. It's called No More Cuts for Federal Workers. It's from Mike Lillis, and the whole idea of what is happening to federal employees is something that, I mean, we get more hits on our website about these pay and benefits issues now than we ever have before. This is really in the forefront of people's minds, and yet what I found fascinating about the conversation over the payroll tax cut extension was, for current federal employees, nothing happened.
Right, but for future federal employees, they're going to be paying significantly more for the defined benefit portion of their retirement plan. Mm-hmm. So it was a way to get something passed that did not have immediate opposition from the current Fed. So it was a way to get something in there that will affect the federal workforce. But the point of the article, and for the federal employees who will be listening, I have to say, don't get your hopes up too much based on the title of the article, No More Cuts for Federal Workers. Mm-hmm. Saying it doesn't make it so. But I did think it was relevant in this time of not a lot of good news for federal employees certainly on the benefits front. You know, we're in the second year of the pay freeze. There's still proposals out there. But I thought it was important to see that certainly some of the Democratic members of Congress in the area, Congressman Steny Hoyer, Ben Cardin, Chris Van Hollen, John Sarbanes from Maryland, Jim Moran, Jerry Connolly from Virginia, and of course Delegate Ellen Holmes Norton from D.C., they're basically banding together and saying, look, somebody's got to stand up for the feds, because they're becoming a punching bag. Mm-hmm. This year, for example, 2012, the average private sector pay increase is going to be about 2.8%. It's not huge, but mm-hmm. of course, as we know, for next year, the president's proposed 0.5% for feds, and there are people who are opposing that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important that feds know that there are folks trying to look out for their interest and trying to make sure that the need to balance the budget is not entirely on their backs.
I apologize for misrepresenting this piece from The Hill. This is by Mike Lillis. It is not a commentary piece. It is a news article, and it's linked now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Senator Ben Cardin was on the show with me after this event on The Hill, and I asked him what he talked about there. But we also talked about the situation with the Postal Service. And Senator Cardin's response was, as far as what's going on with the Postal Service, he said he understands, and I'm paraphrasing, he understands the need for changes at the Postal Service because of the financial situation they're in. But he's opposed to cutting delivery from 6 to 5 days, and he's opposed to a lot of the changes that the Postal Service wants to make to the processing centers and some of the other proposals that are out there he was opposed to, and I had a hard time getting him to speak to what should then change. And I find the Postal Service, at least in my view, to be kind of a microcosm of where the government is overall. Significant financial challenges, long-term deficits, and short-term budget issues. So I understand where all of these people are coming from, and I'm afraid that everybody's looking at this wrong. You and I have talked before, about John, about the idea of not picking on the people who are here, not making a point of trying to get rid of people for the sake of getting rid of people, but right-sizing the mission of these agencies is what I call it, to make sure that they're doing the things that people agree that they should or should, and or if they shouldn't be doing, stop doing them.
Yeah, that indeed, you've put your finger on the conundrum for federal employees and the federal government. Yes, we're in a situation, and I started my government career in the post office mm-hmm. before it became Postal Service. And I'm sympathetic to what's going on over there, but I think the Postmaster General, to use that illustration, has been very clear. Look, Congress said basically we're supposed to be pretty self-supporting. Mm-hmm. electronic age has made a big difference here. We're not getting the revenue. Something's got to give. And this basically the same argument for the rest of government. If we're not bringing enough money in to support, something has to change. Mm-hmm. Either we have to change revenue or we have to change expenditures or a combination, but we can't do business as usual.
That's right.
And that's the hard part. And what we, of course, we're in the silly season of an election right now, so that's part of what's being debated. What is the role of government?
What I took away from this piece is that there's plenty of hyperbole to go around from both sides. So,
absolutely.
This piece is titled No More Cuts for Federal Workers. It's from the Hill newspaper, and you can find it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's John Palguda's third most important federal news story of the week. We'll get to the second most important story as chosen by Dan Mintz and John Palguda when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Gordon Moore, MD, Director of Clinical Transformation for Trail Solutions and President of Ideal Medical Practices, commented during the panel discussion titled Electronic Health Records 2.0, What Does the Future Hold? Brought to you by Booz Allen Hamilton.
I just get a little bit creepy when I think about the Patriot Act and health information technology. You know, we're aggregating all this stuff. We know a heck of a lot about a heck of a lot of people. And yeah, I just hope that there are some very serious firewalls.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword Booz Allen. Electronic health records can offer benefits for patients, providers, and payers, but have not yet realized their full potential. Booz Allen Hamilton believes the next 5 to 10 years will see vast changes in the EHR environment. As mobile health applications proliferate, information is more readily shared, and EHRs take on a key role in delivering high-quality patient-centered health care. Count on Booz Allen to help you be ready for what's next. Learn more at boozallen.com/expertvoices.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Caps fans, don't miss two big Eastern Conference matchups at Verizon Center against the New Jersey Devils on Friday, March 2nd, and the Philadelphia Flyers on Sunday, March 4th, as the Caps continue their drive for the playoffs, powered by Constellation Energy. The Caps have won 3 in a row and look to extend their streak this weekend. Caps games are always huge events. The fans are always pumped, always a great time. This is the hottest ticket in town. Tickets are very limited, so call 202-397-SEAT or log on to washingtoncaps.com/singleticks and do your part in building America's hockey capital.
Hi, everybody. It's David and Nikki Nellis for Foodie and the Beast, the D.C. area's one and only food and wine variety show.
On Sunday, March 4th, we're going to have a rumble in the studio. Artini is hitting the area bars in March, and we have some of the best mixologists in the city coming in studio to mix it up. Also, we'll have a little tea with the tea sommelier from Blue Duck Tavern.
So let's get ready to rumble. That's Foodie and the Beast, next Sunday and every Sunday live right here on 1500 AM.
My advice to you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individuals.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Jason Miller here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. The Treasury Department will stop issuing paper checks. We hear how they're going to do it. And a new bill will reform wartime and contingency contracting. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu brings us the details. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week. as selected this week by Dan Mintz and John Palguda. And Dan Mintz, your second most important federal news story of the week is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Report Predicts Post-PC Era for Agency IT. It's a story by our Jack Moore, and it's built on my conversation with Aileen Black from VMware, talking about the pervasiveness now of mobile devices at federal agencies and how people are using them and how close we are, in her view, and in the view of 150 or so agency CIOs and IT managers, to this what they're calling a post-PC era, where the standard desktop computer is no longer the device of preference for people to do their jobs. What'd you take away with this? Why do you think this is so impactful?
So in this case, the importance to me was what the article represented, because in effect it's an article that summarizes a study by a number of companies that, by absolute coincidence, their business would go up if the study was true.
Huh.
Who knew? But it really, what it represents is something more important, and it's remarkable to me how things have changed. When I was at DOT, which in 2008, we were creating a secretarial blog, and we were one of the first agencies in the government, not the first, which annoyed me, but one of the first. And I started, you know, getting involved with Facebook and Twitter and things like that, and everybody looked askance at it. Well, a week or two ago, I was invited, for, again, no discernible reason, to be in it with a group of bloggers. I don't blog enough to even be in that group, but a group of bloggers associated with FOSSI. They're trying to push the FOSSI show. Mm-hmm. And I'd say half the group that was there were from the government. It is, and it's completely common now, mm-hmm. all across the government. You know, on the article here, I was listening to the 1500, I was listening to WFED on the way down here, and we were talking about social networking within DOD.
Mm-hmm.
And no one thinks twice about that. The point is, none of these things will work unless the end device is not your computer, it's your phone. Or in this case, you know, my company puts out, most of the executives have tablets and mm-hmm. things like that. Or it's your tablet, it's your portable device. So what's happening now is, it's not that you'll just throw away all your PCs, but the fact of the matter is, most people interface into the internet using a mobile device most of the time now. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a transition that people do it, and they don't even think through the implications now.
Mm-hmm.
My daughters, who are in their 20s, would have no idea what it was like to not be connected up with their phone.
Mm-hmm.
You don't call them. They won't. They don't answer the phone. If you want to get to them, you text them.
Uh-huh.
Or you chat with them online. I catch my older daughter on Skype when she's at Starbucks pretending to do some work or something like that.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said. I was tweeting. I apologize. No, I'm just kidding. The point of this conversation that I had with Aileen, I thought, was to make people understand. It's funny to me that we're still at a point like this in government, but I think there are some folks that still think that this is something that will pass.
It's yesterday, even though we're wrestling with the policy issues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look at the amount of government activity which legitimately is done in a mobile situation, again, going back to DOT, thousands and thousands of FAA inspectors go out and inspect planes and things like that, and historically have used laptops, which are not actually easy to lug around. Tablets and things like that would be much more efficient. Federal Railroad Administration inspects trains. You have a lot of government personnel that are themselves have to be mobile, and it's critical that their government interface follows them along with them. It is the provisioning of the service capability, regardless of the endpoint that you're dealing with, and I think it's inevitable.
Now, this, like many other things, John, is not a technology issue. This is a people issue at the core.
Absolutely,
is that fair to say? When you look at what the agencies are doing and how they're managing this, are they doing this in a way that makes sense for the ultimate fulfillment of the mission, or are these policies, do you think, still resting, are they still being thought about as IT policies and not as human capital management policies or even mission meeting policies?
I think it's very much a mixed bag, Francis, and it varies by agency, mm-hmm. as most of these things typically do. But probably the people part of it you know, lags behind. And so, well, we've got this great technology, and how do we use it? And now, you know, we need to start thinking about how we change our policies in terms of, what access do you have when you're not in the building, and what about teleworking, and what kind of support do we need for that? So I think the people part of it is behind the technology, but hopefully they eventually catch up.
Yeah.
Because I agree with Dan, obviously. This is, we're here. It's not going to go backwards. It never does.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a mixed bag.
That's an interesting concept because I think you're exactly right. Progress is a forward-looking, forward-thinking thing. Why is it hard for people to get their arms around the idea, not just about tablets or mobile devices or any of that? Why do people continue to do the same thing over and over and over again, which is to assume that, well, this is just some fad and it'll go away and we'll go back to the way we're doing things, when history's proven that never happens, as you say?
It's just personal experience. I mean, you keep doing what you're comfortable doing. As long as it's working, there's no need to change.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, it's when the younger folks start coming in and actually showing, demonstrating that, hey, we're actually more efficient, more effective if we do it this way, and you're going to get left behind if you don't adapt.
Yeah.
Then, you have that forcing mechanism. It's just kind of human nature, the inertia of, why change unless I have to?
Now, the partnership's Twitter account is R, public service, @rpublicservice. Do you tweet personally?
Not as much as I should. We do. I mean, the partnership
does all the time, because I follow them. And
yes, and I saw your tweet on the way over.
Yes.
You tweeted about this upcoming session.
I did, because Dan's Twitter handle is
Technogeezer,
and you gotta tell the story about how that works sometime.
By the way, I retweeted your tweet.
Oh, good. Well, that I should go retweet that. And I know that my internet editor this afternoon, Jack Moore, retweeted it too. So we're all just tweeting each other. That's a whole nother conversation.
And I have a great communication staff that does tweeting all day for us.
Yes, Samantha, and you brought your
we've got our
intern
awesome,
with you today.
Awesome communications intern, Stephanie, here
Terrific.
With us today.
And it's great to have you. The Federal News Countdown's second most important federal news story of the week, according to Dan Mintz, is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Report Predicts Post-PC Era for Agency IT. It's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. John Palguda's story number two for the countdown, when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues in a moment.
This is Jim Fleisig. Please join me on Tuesday, March 6th at 12 noon for my monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will be a roundtable discussing secure information sharing live from the 2012 AFSEA Homeland Security Conference. The roundtable includes government leaders from DOD, DOJ, FBI, and DNI. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum Tuesday, March 6th on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by the AFSEA Homeland Security Conference.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Tune in Sunday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio. This show features four of the D.C. region's finest business leaders. Through each of these compelling interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, and opportunities that lie ahead. The show inspires, entertains, and is full of wisdom unheard elsewhere. Tune in Sundays at 9 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Sleep and shift work. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, crime never sleeps, so police can't either. And with night and overnight shifts, officers can have sleep disorders. Dr. Charles Seisler of Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital looked at data on about 5,000 officers over 2 years. About 40% had signs of sleep disorders. The most common was obstructive sleep apnea, in which there can be abnormal pauses in breathing while sleeping. Dr. Seisler.
Officers with obstructive sleep apnea had a doubling of the risk of cardiovascular disease, diabetes, an increased risk of falling asleep at the wheel, and an increased risk of depression.
The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message is brought to you by GEICO.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown each week. In the 3 o'clock hour on Friday includes two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. They choose the news stories from the previous week that they think are the three most important to people who work for the government, rank them in order from number 3 to number 1, and come in and count them down with me on the Federal News Countdown. This week it's Dan Mintz from PowerTech and John Palguda from the Partnership for Public Service. And John Palguda, your second most important federal news story is Emily Kopp's story on federalnewsradio.com, headline, Moran Crafting Bill to Shake Up Senior Executive Service. Now, these comments from Congressman Moran came at the release of a report that your organization put out, and we have a link to that, of course, at federalnewsradio.com. You and the McKinsey & Company organization put this together. I guess what I took away from Congressman Moran's remarks, totally separate from your report, is Congressman Moran, Emily writes here, Moran said he planned to work with the report's authors, you and McKinsey and Company, to craft a bill that would turn the SES into the federal government's A-team. And what I took away from that was, if he thinks this bill is necessary, then he somehow thinks that maybe the SES isn't currently the federal government's A-team. This bill will help do that somehow. And I thought that's kind of a strange statement from someone who represents a whole lot of members of the senior executive service.
Well, frankly, in his conversation, he elaborated that, you know, he does believe that, you know, senior executives are really good at what they do. It was more around the fact that, you know, there wasn't the level of support that there should be to allow them to, you know, continue to grow and develop, and even more so on folks who aspire to the senior executive service. So he was speaking to the theme of the partnership report, mission-driven mobility, which is for, in many cases, we put people into the senior executive service, and I'm a former career senior executive, so I can you know, speak a little bit to that. But for a lot of them, they, you know, they go into the job and that's it. That's where they end their career, in that same job, you know, almost half of them, same job, same organization. the notion is, and we didn't start with the inclusion. We went out, we talked to 90 different folks from, you know, who'd been in the senior executive, been, you know, other places. The conclusion was, you know, there really is value to grow folks, not only through, you know, the exposure to their current job, mm-hmm. but exposure to the environment and jobs in other parts of the agency, different agencies, different sectors. And every single person we talked to that had that multi-sector, multi-agency, or multi-function experience, they've been in budget and HR and IT, mm-hmm. they all said it made me a better person, a mm-hmm. better executive because of that. And I think the point that the congressman was trying to get to, I believe, and certainly we did in our report, is that we need to provide more mechanisms to support that sort of mobility. It certainly, you know, the systems allow it, but we need to incentivize it. And particularly for folks who aspire to the senior executive service, make it clear that, you know, we're going to look for people that have that breadth of experience and that broader exposure.
How much of what you saw at Transportation with SES people being able to move job to job was a function of the way the structure exists, and how much of it was their desire to continue doing what they were doing because they really liked doing what they were doing, Dan?
When I was there, our deputy secretary was interested in achieving the same kind of goal on his own, and toward the end of the administration in 2008, he's instituted a policy to try and move some of the SESs around. And I have less experience inside the government, though I've been around it a long time. I would say most of the lack of mobility is self-selected. That is, it's get to a comfort area and you stay there because you know you're just comfortable with the surroundings. I would say I think moving to different functions, to me at least, makes a lot more sense than necessarily moving to multiple agencies. Mm-hmm. There are two challenges because the government is, we were talking off air a little bit, at least from my perspective, while we want to bring some business processes, is not fundamentally a business. And there's some things that translate well and some don't. If you're doing rotation like you would if somebody worked for a large private company and you're grooming them for a senior position, you move them to different functions. You put them in finance, you might put them in marketing, you put them in operations, things like that. You don't put them in your competitor. Mm-hmm. You don't put them to another company to get experience back to your company. You wouldn't, that would be the equivalent of moving agency to agency,
right.
It seems to me. The other issue you have is, and this is just the way the government works, which is not a bad thing, the reason you're grooming this person is you've decided this person, unlike the other 30 people, is somebody you're going to treat in a special fashion. This person, unlike those others, is the person you're going to push to all these areas because you're then going to promote them. In the government, there's an enormous desire for equity, for fairness between people. And, I mean, it's a good thing, but it gets in the way of that kind of decision because the first kind of rotation, which is the normal one in private industry, is saying, I'm going to treat those people not equally.
Mm-hmm.
29, I'm going to treat ordinary, one special. I don't think that would go over well culturally in the government. I mean, they'd have difficulty with that segregation of priorities.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you're right, Dan, and I think we might have to actually revisit part of that culture a bit in government. But there's another nuance here that has, you know, didn't get really picked up in the conversation that we had or we've had in some of the media articles, which is that, first of all, there's no disagreement with the fact that moving people for the sake of moving people doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
The one other element about this, which is talked about in the report, is that when we created the Senior Executive Service in 1978, and I was working at the Civil Service Commission at the time, so mm-hmm. I was kind of there at the beginning. The notion was we were going to, you know, take these jobs that, you know, lent themselves to this kind of, you know, broader use of the persons in those jobs. They were mm-hmm. going to be part of the executive cadre of government. And what happened was they took everybody who was at the super grades, as they called them at the time, put them all into the senior executive service, and some of those jobs were not the kind of jobs that it made sense to move people, mm-hmm. but they're part of the senior executive service. There's another category called the senior leader or the senior technical, two different categories, that have comparable pay. And I think part of the issue here is we need to identify those jobs where it does not make sense to move people. They're the senior technical expert for your function. That's their value to the organization.
Right.
And if they're in the senior executive service, maybe we reclassify the job. Don't change the pay. They're worth every cent they get.
Mm-hmm.
But reclassify them out of the senior executive service,
yeah.
Because that's not the intent of that job.
You mentioned SES pay, and that's a whole other can of worms that we don't have a chance to open today. But you can see John Palguta's second most important federal news story of the week at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It's Emily Kopp's story, headlined, Moran Crafting Bill to Shake Up Senior Executive Service. The number one most important federal news story of the week from John Palguta and Dan Mintz when the Federal News Countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Navy Rear Admiral retired Elizabeth A. Height, Vice President, U.S. Public Sector Cybersecurity Practice, HP Enterprise Services, on the Cybersecurity Combating Threats to Our Software Environment panel, sponsored by Hewlett-Packard.
We look at applications and software development from an architectural view today. At least we should, because quite frankly, it's so much easier to design security in than to find the thousands or tens of thousands of vulnerabilities that might exist in that software at a later date once deployed.
Could your IT security have made you less secure? Traditional IT security defenses, firewalls, encryption, and intrusion detection systems are extremely effective, and that's the problem. They're so good that the bad guys are now training their sights on a new target, exploitable vulnerabilities in software applications. HP can help governments secure mission-critical applications by designing security in from the beginning, finding the vulnerabilities inside existing software, and fixing them quickly and cost-effectively. To learn more, visit federalnewsradio.com/HP.
Do you know someone who's done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's third annual COSI Awards. Together we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Federal News Radio senior correspondent Mike COSI and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the COSI Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search COSI Award.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DOD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DOD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DOD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown every Friday in the 3 o'clock hour with this week's experts choosing the most important federal news stories of the week, John Palguta of the Partnership for Public Service and Dan Mintz of PowerTech. And we are up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week, according to Dan Mintz, is headlined, Google privacy change taking effect today is illegal, EU officials say. And the whole issue of privacy on the web and what it really privacy really means and how it should be administered is two things in my view, changing dramatically even on a daily or weekly basis, and three or two really confusing, obviously because I can't even get the numbers right.
Yeah, the article again, it's more of what it represents. There's been many articles about this big privacy change that Google has put in and what it means and what it doesn't mean. And the interesting thing to me here again is it's the policy issues that are interesting because, the United States has one set of laws. The EU has another set of laws. The EU says it isn't being followed. And by the way, they're not saying that at least the article quotes doesn't say that Google's doing something illegal. It is they didn't follow the right process in notifying people of what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And Google says, we don't care, we're going ahead and doing it anyway, which is really, really interesting. And I think that what's going on here is, and this sort of harks back to something we talked about a little bit earlier about, where's this conflict coming about? And I think what's going on because of the internet is there is a conflict that's affecting culture in general between hierarchical models and non-hierarchical. So where the internet gets rid of middle management, has top immediately going to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Society doesn't respect old and young anymore. And it's just sort of Wild West. It's sort of it's a little bit closer to the Google model mm-hmm. of the way things are going on. And people resist that. And they want structure and order. And when you see all the articles that we, at least that I brought up today, this conflict is going on between a completely free, wild internet and a structured internet. Should it have rules? Should it have privacy laws? Should you have the ability to stop spam? Should you have the ability to shut it down? Or is it just the Wild West? And the same thing here. What kind of structure? And so you're having this big conflict playing out all over the place, not just in terms of IT, but globally. The Arab Spring, the Syria, a lot of the stuff that's going on in China, these are all, again, these structures between societies that are trying to keep a hierarchical relationship and the internet breaking down all these barriers, but losing structure. And it causes people disquiet. A lot mm-hmm. of people who might want freedom don't like complete freedom. And you see this conflict going on.
We talked earlier in the program, John, about the implications of the post-PC era, mobile devices and all of those kinds of things. And I wonder, now that I connect what Dan's talking about there to what we talked about earlier, if now some neurons are firing and I'm sensing the discomfort that people have because they're maybe understanding that structural breakdown, and by breakdown I don't necessarily mean decay or rubble, but just disruption, I guess, maybe. Is that, Dan, do you think,
yes,
maybe a better word than...
Yes, and you find it, you know, the fight over globalization and for and against globalization is in many ways has nothing to do with the economics of it. It's I'm losing my place mm-hmm. in terms of where I sit and what I am.
Is that, am I onto something there?
You are, and it goes to, in part, you know, a loss of control. It's like, you know, well, I want freedom of information. I want to get, you know, what I want, but I'm not so sure about, you know, information about me, how much I want people to have.
Yeah.
And then we start seeing some conflicts. I mean, my wife will not use Google as a search engine anymore because mm-hmm. she's just, you know, she's unhappy
yeah.
About what they've done with that.
And I wonder if you quizzed her on it, if she could explain the nuances of what they were talking about, or if it's perceptual and it's her concept of what she thinks or what she's heard Google is doing as far as collecting and using information.
Well, yeah, she listens to the radio, Francis, and that's what scares her. But it's just she doesn't know all the mechanics.
Uh-huh.
I don't either. But it's the notion that there's some information about her, what she's looked at online or
uh-huh.
all that may be available for someone to put together and look at, and just the notion that there's a certain level of information that I'm not comfortable other people having,
mm-hmm.
even though more broadly I'm very much open to freedom of information.
We just have about a minute left in this segment, but I want to ask you, John, this concept of privacy and what should and shouldn't be kept private, there's a tremendous generational impact there, too. My son doesn't understand why I don't want him to give his email address to every potential app that he gets on his iPod. Because they might bomb him with information. Well, I can just delete it. He doesn't care about that kind of thing the way that people in our generation seem to care about that thing. What's the implication for that on, say, a workforce where exchanging information might have big implications?
Well, and particularly a workforce that happens to be in the federal government,
mm-hmm.
perhaps, where we do have some national security issues and some, you know, privacy issues around, you know, we everybody has to give Social Security their Social Security numbers.
Exactly.
Et cetera. So, yeah, it has, you know, there's a lot of stuff we're going to have to work through here. And I think, you know, Google and the article that Dan has come up with kind of put some of this in perspective in terms of what the dialogue is going to have to be around.
Dan Mintz's most important federal news story of the week is headlined, Google privacy change taking effect today is illegal, EU officials say. And you can find it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. John Palguda's most important federal news story of the week is next to wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio. Join me this week for my special guest, Len Wolf, president of The Wolf Group, an international tax and investment advisory firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Tune in to General Jim Jones, former National Security Advisor, General Chuck Wold, subject matter specialist in international security policy, and the Honorable Tom Davis, former Virginia Congressman and Chairman of the House Government Reform Committee, as they discuss the impact of the recently announced budget reductions on the new defense strategy. Tune in to Deloitte's Fed Central, Wednesday, March 7th and 21st at 11:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. to learn more.
Meeting mission goals through IT modernization, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Air Force wants to know if commercial cellular networks might be the way forward for its wireless communication needs. The service is trying to collapse several of its legacy wireless networks that it says are becoming too costly and too cumbersome to operate. The Command and Control Integration Center has just started testing the 4G wireless networks of the four largest national cellular carriers. They're also testing next-generation handheld devices running both Android and Apple's iOS.
General Dynamics IT delivers the full strength of enterprise IT to drive innovation like infrastructure consolidation and modernization, cross-domain information sharing, cloud computing, Web 2.0, and a constant flow of new applications and IT services. General Dynamics IT helps government, military, and commercial organizations achieve new levels of productivity and mission effectiveness. General Dynamics IT brings together the expertise, technology, and best practices to deliver secure enterprise IT solutions. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Attention federal managers. The Federal Managers Association invites all federal managers, supervisors, and executives to its National Management Training Seminar, Federal Managers Doing More with Less, on Tuesday, March 13th. Federal managers will gather in Arlington, Virginia for practical presentations, including 7 quick fixes for enhancing performance, improving employee productivity and well-being, and decisively addressing conduct-related issues. For more details, visit fedmanagers.org. That's fedmanagers.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the three most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by Dan Mintz and John Palguda. And John, your most important story of the week's from GovExec. The headline is Watchdog Finds Tens of Billions in Cost-Cutting Opportunities. And I don't know if it was intentional. I bet it was. But this fits with the story that you had at number two with Congressman Moran talking about the senior executive search. But it also fits with your number three story, which is the whole idea of cuts to people who are working, paying benefits for people who are working for the government. That if you really want to find some places to cut, there are a lot of other opportunities out there.
You're absolutely right, Francis.
I'm smarter than I look.
You look pretty smart. and the watchdog, just to be clear, that we're talking about here is the Government Accountability Office.
Mm-hmm.
But it does go exactly to that conundrum we were talking about at the top of the show, which is, you know, you have folks saying, well, you know, don't cut here and don't do this. But at the end of the day, something has to give. We talked about the post office. Something has to give. The model we have isn't sustainable. Either you have to figure out how to do revenue or cost reductions or both. So what my top story here has to do with the fact that the Government Accountability Office was asked to take a look to find specifically opportunities to reduce duplication, overlap, and fragmentation. That's the title of their report, and achieve savings, enhance revenue. And the reason this is important, I think, is that, first of all, they did identify 32 areas in which they found evidence of duplication, overlap, or fragmentation.
Mm-hmm.
And they found another 19 additional opportunities for agencies or Congress to take action to reduce the cost of government. And this is a fairly bipartisan, as we know, Government Accountability Office is nonpartisan.
Mm-hmm.
But what they have here, I think, has bipartisan support. And if, you know, since something is going to have to give, and some of what has to give is going to be on the either the expenditure part, and when you get to that, it's like, well, how do we continue to provide the services and benefits of government at less cost?
Mm-hmm.
This laundry list contains some of the things that I think are going to actually happen mm-hmm. going forward. They're going to have to.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't know yet which ones. But they talk, for example, about cybersecurity and human capital, part of, you know, Dan's area, and they're talking about the cybersecurity workforce and the fact that we need better structure, guidance, and coordination to mm-hmm. avoid duplication of efforts on the cybersecurity front. The Environmental Protection Agency has 37 laboratories that address environmental issues, and there's overlap and fragmentation, so they're identifying an opportunity there to save some money,
mm-hmm.
but still get the job of environmental protection.
There's a whole ton of these, and we have this GAO report linked up at federalnewsradio.com. Dan, as we look at this and think about the potential savings and think about all of the things that are going on here, one statement by Senator Coburn, who testified at this House hearing, I thought was, I think he deserves a thumbs up regardless of what you think of him ideologically because of what he said here. Today's findings are a testament to failed congressional efforts of oversight and a reminder Congress continues to shirk its duty to address even blatant areas of waste and mismanagement of taxpayer funding. And since they give out the money to the agencies, it seems that there's a role there for them to take here in trying to make some of these things happen and not put the onus of it only on the administration.
Yes. You know, the classical discussion is one of the problems, you know, DHS has is there's like over 100 committees that they have to deal with related to that. That's certainly a problem. Another quote I noticed in here when Coburn talked about the importance of having a metric for program performance, once again, a policy issue. I suspect we would have to watch the members of Congress argue for the next year over what program performance would be defined.
Mm-hmm.
I will say to some extent, this is also an easy target. It's always easy to say, well, we don't have to do this, we don't have to do that. We'll just remove, you know, waste, fraud, and abuse. We'll reduce that. As if there was a line item where people
mm-hmm.
were,
just,
you know,
cross it out.
And so how do you do that?
Yeah.
The answer is don't do that.
Yeah.
But it's not like there's in the project plan, there was the line that said waste, fraud, and abuse. And they were planning to do that. Now we won't.
Mm-hmm.
So I think to some extent, there's an unavoidable cost to some extent with some of these inefficiencies.